Good morning, everyone. Happy Monday to you. Thank you for joining me. I am your host, Sharifa Hardy, and I have an amazing, amazing, amazing show for you today. I've already been speaking backstage with my guests, and I love it when guests have come from so diverse backgrounds in different industries. But what I'm good at is finding the commonalities between all of us. So when we start talking with today's guest, you'll see that we have more in common than we have that is different. So I am going to ask you to do what I always ask you to do, and that is to go ahead and share this show. I got to get my Friday energy up. I'm feeling that Monday energy. That Monday energy, I'm kind of down. Let me get my Friday energy to tell you what I really want to tell you. And that's right. I want you to wake someone up. That's what I want you to do. I want you to wake one of your friends up, tell them that we have amazing guests, tweet them, text them, inbox them, whatever you have to do, because I want them to watch the Roundtable Talk Show, and friends don't let friends miss out on the Roundtable Talk Show. So we are going to start with our first guest, and he is very interesting. He's going to share with us his life, being an author, a tarot instructor, a media personality, and he's going to also discuss the secrets of the tarot. Let's introduce Mr. David Kravchuk. Good morning, David. How are you?
Thank you. I'm fine. Thank you for having me.
You are so welcome. And it's a pleasure. I read your bio. And I this is the thing that I do. When I look at someone's bio, I look past just the general information, the business information, and I try to find that little magic in everyone. And what I found interesting about you is that you discuss tarot and Torah, which many people or some people may think that are so different. So, you know, like against each other. David, what are your thoughts? Tell us your thoughts. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, this was actually why the publisher wanted to publish the book, because no one had ever been able to trace back the origin of the tarot. Mm-hmm. If you read the tarot backwards, it's Torah. Mm-hmm. And we have a tradition, and it's played out with the dreidel. Many people know about the dreidel, see? And you're supposed, during the holiday of Hanukkah, you're supposed to gamble with your children and to remind them that that's part of the story of Hanukkah, that the Greeks were trying to Hellenize the Jews, and the Jews didn't want to Hellenize. So at one point, they prohibit him from studying the Torah. So one of the stories is that, you know, they would gamble. And, you know, the Greeks would come and say, what are you doing? We're gambling. We can't study. We'll gamble. But it was a clandestine way to teach. In the same way, like in Africa, that there or in the Americas, like when they would drum. Oh, we're just drumming. But they weren't drumming. They were talking to one another. So this is the origin of the tarot cards, and the way I understand it, because I've spent many years studying the Tree of Life and the 22 major arcana correspond to the 22 letters of the Hebrew alphabet, and the four suits of the minor arcana fit precisely into the Tree of Life. So that's why they wanted to publish the book, because no one had ever been able to do that before. And the interesting thing is, not one Jewish publisher would review the book.
but there was a reason behind that, right? What was the reason why not one Jewish publisher would review the book?
Because, you know, the rabbis want to have control on everything. And I was one of them, so, you know, I'm left out of the game.
Okay, I'm going to rephrase all of that. I'm going to rephrase all of that, because I personally was looking for a different answer. Many people feel that, I'm not saying your answer is wrong. It can't be wrong. It's your answer, but I want to dig deep a little bit more specific into what you're saying. I feel, and I have heard, and I believe that many religious leaders, whether it's Jewish or Christian or Al-Islam, whatever it is, many of them may not want to associate with tarot because there are negative connotations associated with it. So I think that's like part of the whole reason why people need more information.
Well, The thing is, when it comes to Torah, that if what one brings does not contradict the Torah, then it is Torah. So they have no right to leave this out, because this is truly part of the Torah. So it's a, you know, I mean, we're very big in law, and law is a very, you know, it's a, it, you know, it's generally, it's a very cognitive, logical thing. So you can't let your emotions get into it.
Absolutely.
You may not like it, but if it's part of the truth, you can't exclude it.
Absolutely. And I believe that people learn in different ways and people have different beliefs. And part of my focus is to expand everyone's mind so that we're able to learn more about what's going on in the world, what is real, what's not, and what is just our beliefs. So we are going to come back to you, because I definitely want to have, I have definitely have more questions for you. But right now we're going to introduce our next guest. She's also an author, a motivational speaker. And she's going to talk to us all the way from Canada about her book, Dream Big, Miss Kathy Takaro. Good morning, Kathy. How are you?
Good morning. I'm very well. Thank you. How are you?
I think that was that delay going from America to Canada. We had to wait a couple of seconds.
A long ways. I'm awesome. I really am. We have a funny work schedule. We work 16 days on and then get 16 days off. So I'm just at the tail end of my 16 days off. So I'm trying to get, you know, things done. So, yeah.
So thank you for joining
people
us.
That don't. Thank you. I missed a lot of interviews because when I'm at work, I work 13-hour shifts and we don't have any electronics. So, I mean, you only can do what you can do. So, yeah.
You work in a cave? I'd be like, where in the world is it where there are no electronics? Or is that like, you know, if it's top secret, okay. Don't tell me. You know what I mean? I don't want a man showing up at my door.
No, I work, it is at the border of Northwest Territories. I work in an open pit mine. And it's really hard to describe what I do. So I have my picture. I don't know if you can see the truck that I drive. That's me standing
that
beside
truck?
It. This is me. This is the tire that goes here. This is
you drive
yeah, this
that
is the truck,
truck
I drive. It's 2.5 story. I do. It's 2.5 stories high, 3,800 square feet. It carries 400 tons. It's an $8 million vehicle. It goes 50 miles an hour because you guys are in the States when it's fully loaded. It's awesome. It's so much fun.
I'm proud of you, Kathy, because I'm such a girly girl. I just look at that truck and I'm like, I might break a nail.
Come on.
That is not me.
No, I operate other equipment. We operate the biggest equipment in the world up there. So I also operate a 24M grader, which is bigger than a highway tractor trailer, an 18-wheel foot. Like, it's bigger than that. It's massive. I also operate a 52,000 gallon water truck. So it's huge. So yeah, it's a good gig. But the best part about it is that I was a nurse before this.
You were, say that
I was a nurse for 13 years and I was a nurse before this.
Oh, wow.
For 13
I can
years.
See the nurse. And I can see the nurse just by the smile. You have that nurse smile. Yeah. You know what I mean? That's why I can't be a nurse. I have my bedside manner is horrible. I'm like, are you well already? Like, get well. Like,
get out of it.
I'm not a warm and fuzzy kind of person. But in between being a nurse and driving trucks, you're a motivational speaker and an author. So how did all of this come about?
Oh, man. I had literally a lifetime of trauma and abuse that I never was able to address. So when I was 42, I go show up at the hospital and I look at my patient list. I got 10 people to take care of and I couldn't do it. I couldn't read my sheet. And I knew that I was like just physically and mentally unable to take another step. I ended up quitting my job. I became alcoholic. I was homeless. I lost everything I owned. And literally I was on the streets for 7 days and a man named Toothless Joe, I kid you not, slapped me on the back and he goes, this is the life, live it, love it. when he did that, I call it a God smack because it snapped me out of my that fog that I was carrying around. And I look at him and I said, this is not my life. And I made a decision. I turned around. I went to get the help that I needed. I sobered up. I have 8 years sober. I 2 years later, I was driving the biggest truck in the world. And yeah, and now this is my third book. I just published a children's book. I travel the world. I work with women in shelters. I work with youth in schools. I go to juvenile centers, prisons, communities. I do a lot of charities. Right now I'm going in November to do a charity tour across the Caribbean islands, giving my book for free to the kids. I believe that having a voice is important if you want to change your story. And so that's what I promote.
That's beautiful. I always talk about how everything is just one change, one decision, that one move where all of a sudden your life is different. And for you, that was that day with Toothless Joe, who we want to give a shout out to Toothless Joe, okay, for helping.
I know, right?
I don't know where
he
is.
Never saw that man again. I went looking for him. I do Operation Hydration, where I give cold water to the homeless on the hottest days of the year every summer. And I have looked for that man, never seen him again. He was my guardian angel, you know, snap out of it.
Absolutely. He came, he brought the message, your life changed, and now everything is wonderful. I have more questions for you, but like always, I'm going to hop on over to my next guest.
All good. And
then we're going to come back. Our next guest works with organizational development. She's a partner in Organizational Performance Group. Please welcome Laura Freeburn Smith. Good morning, Laura. How are you?
I'm good. Good morning, Sharifa. Thank you for having me on the show and the amazing guests that I'm in this roundtable with. I haven't heard from everyone yet, but great story.
I'm going to get to Paul. Don't pause, okay?
Laura? What's that?
I said, we're going to get to Paul. We're going to bring in all the guests. But we want to find out about you, who you are and what you do.
All right. So what I do is I work in the field of organizational development, which is looking at how organizations function. And really, at a cocktail party, if somebody says, what do? I say, we help people work together better. Mm-hmm. And of course, that turns into a long request for assistance, usually. It's a little bit like being an MD. Oh, yeah, I've got this problem with my staff. So we work with everybody from the C-suite, the executive suite, down to frontline staff and into transforming their organizations. Sometimes it's a group. Sometimes it's one person. Sometimes it's the entire organization. So we do strategic planning, team building, executive coaching, a lot of teaching on how to facilitate groups, how to move them forward. And our clients are everything from small nonprofits like New Haven Reads, we're in Connecticut, to ESPN and Disney. So we run the whole like gamut of organizational issues. And we've got a small staff and a bunch of subcontractors. And we are really privileged to get asked to go into organizations who want to make their cultures better. And it really is a privilege and an honor to work on that.
When you give your description, the first thing that came to mind was a referee. Like you just go in and you referee all these issues and that are going on with the business. But how did you get into this? What motivated you to go into this industry?
So I'll try to keep it short because I know we haven't heard from Paul yet. And I don't want to.
Paul is fine.
Okay, just worried about him. So what we do mostly is what's called facilitation. Actually, the word that we use is facilitation or coaching. And I came about into this field way back in my early 20s. I worked in a refugee camp for 4 years on the Thai-Cambodian border. And I was the head of an education program with 1,000 staff. And as a result of that, I had a lot of questions about managing and organizations. So I ended up going to Yale for my MBA and then ended up pursuing this question. My entire life has been about how can we get organizations to be better? And I grew up in a very radical social justice family in San Francisco. So I have this interesting combination of an East Coast Ivy League education and a radical social justice background. And I'm really intrigued in how we help people shift their paradigms on spreading the wealth, spreading the power, changing the hierarchy, but being able to speak that language that people in the C-suite speak and understanding the economics and financial drivers of that. I ended up getting also a PhD in organizational systems. I'm on the faculty at Yale part-time. And I write a lot about these issues. And I love being able to combine my left brain analytical. I think somebody was referring to that a moment ago, but also this kind of right brain holistic part, which is about creating a better space for everyone on the planet. So there's the very short. That's my life in 3 minutes. Yeah.
I had allocated at least 5 minutes for you.
Okay, good. I think I took the whole thing.
You got 2 minutes left. So let me go back to my questions.
Yeah.
It's interesting because the West Coast, East Coast, the way you see the world, the way you see organizations, and just the description of distributing the wealth and, you know, working on social justice, many people may consider that a utopian world or a utopian view. And, you know, this is the way it is. The rich get richer, the poor get poorer. What are your thoughts on distributing the wealth, if we can, if we will? Like, what are some of the things that come to mind for you?
Well, when I think about redistributing the wealth, I think about it from several intellectual perspectives. So including economics, psychology, biological drivers, political, et cetera. My BA is from UC Berkeley in philosophy and political science combined. So I have this interesting mix of this idealism that my parents gave me and Berkeley gave me, grounded with an MBA from Yale, which is the practical realities of how money works. And money is not a bad thing. So one of the things I always say is money's a form of energy. It's how we transfer energy is through money. It's what you do with the money that makes a difference. So that's one perspective. The other is this biological driver for amassing resources, which is fear-based. Now, so if we can start to transform people's fear of not having enough, and we move from a selfish paradigm, which is often very biologically driven, we meet that where it is, we start to decrease the fear, people are more comfortable sharing. And the US is very much an infant in this. If we look at other countries that are more fully developed from a psychological standpoint, we look at Sweden and Norway and others, the US is very, very much developmentally almost a preschooler in its development of being able to think about others and release fear and share at a very deep level. I'm an eternal optimist. We will get there. We're just very young in this dialogue. So what I do in my work is I ask questions of CEOs to help them make a mental switch. We don't confront, we're not hammering people, but we're meeting people where they are and asking questions that we hope help shift their internal paradigm.
Okay, so I'm gonna give you a hypothetical. And every time I ask a question, this is interesting. I love watching guests, but every time I ask you a question, you give me a different degree. So I'm like, maybe there's more in there. So you've got a lot of degrees. You have a lot of information, but not to pick on anybody, but I'm going to pick on somebody because he's a real person. But just an example, not as him personally, but like the Jeff Bezos of the world, you know, you have trillions of dollars. Many people are hungry. How do we make that switch? And I know he donates and, you know, does philanthropy, but you still have trillions of dollars, and those trillions of dollars can be utilized to help millions, if not trillions, of people. Is that someone you will work with, or that type of person, someone you will work with in order to make that switch?
If he asked us to, we would, definitely. The reason that trillionaires and billionaires don't make those switches so easily is complex. And I want to share just a couple thoughts, and it's not the gamut of the reasons for people that don't make those switches. First of all, it's well documented in psychological research that the wealthier people get, the more they are inclined to think they don't have enough money. Okay, so that it increases your fear. So, and we work with billionaires, and I actually heard one once say, we need more money. And I thought, oh, that is so interesting. This person has billions of dollars and they still feel they need more money. So and instead of attacking the individual, it's about the underlying psychology of what happens as you amass wealth and fear comes along. So a totally other answer to your question, Sharifa, is one of the reasons we need really good government and good laws is we need to legislate away greed. Greed is natural. Mm-hmm. And if the way to control it is through really good government. And then people start to shift their paradigm as they adapt to not being able to express greed and violence and racism and all these negative attributes that we all carry. We all carry this. You know, we are a mix of the positive and the negative. But really good government takes us to higher ground. It moves us as a civilization forward. And of course, we are in a you-know-what show right now with our government. It's not functioning. And we've got to get it back so it's functioning and doing the job that good government does, is to set a solid, robust baseline and a bar for how we can be better people. That helps trillionaires and billionaires. The last comment I'll make, and then I'll stop, is the nonprofit sector is also really broken right now. Yeah. It is not, it has not fixed the fundamental problems of humanity in the United States. Think about it. Is poverty gone? No, we've been at it for years. All kinds of diseases, all kinds of educational issues. I'm not saying we should get rid of it, but it also needs its own transformation, the nonprofit sector. So I'll stop there. You can tell, have I been thinking about these for 40 years? Don't get me started. I will talk for hours. I write all the time and I, you know, speak wherever I can about these issues. So anyway, thank you for asking, Sharifa.
You are welcome. And I got a whole list of questions, but we got to bring in our friend Mel Gibson. Oh, I'm sorry. That was the wrong word. Pause. It was Paul. My eyes at 44, they're not as good as they used to be. But our next guest, Mr. Paul Foss, is a president of Ring Boost. But what stood out to me in his bio was the word nonconformist. And I read it, and I read it again. And I said, he's going to be interesting. Oh, yeah. Good morning, Paul. How are you?
How are you? Thank you for having me on. I'll be a lot quicker because I have very few degrees. So it's easy. You don't have to go through my degree list. I have a lot. What was that?
I said, that's okay. I don't have a degree either.
Yes, you know? I have a life resume, not a paper resume.
Tell us about your life then, Paul.
I'm a father, I'm a husband, I'm an entrepreneur. I think that I am living life on my own terms. And this didn't happen when I was young. It happened when I was a little older and more sort of understood the world a little bit, that I don't buy all the way you're supposed to do things. I do things my way. And I live the way I want to live. And I sort of don't necessarily conform to the rules. Mm-hmm. And I don't think you have to. I think you could sort of, you know, the whole purpose of this one go around, if you believe there's one go around, is do things your way. And, you know, I try and solve for happiness and doing things I like and experiencing new things and learn all the time. But, you know, I have a core business that I focus on, which is a lot of my energy. But then, you know, a lot of my friends and occasionally my wife say, I really don't know what it is you do. I mean, I go to the same conference and people go, can you really tell me what you're about? Because I'm like, they see me doing all these things. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, because I'm just experiencing life. There's not a rule book. Mm-hmm. Just because someone did it some way before doesn't mean that that's the right way. I just do it my way. And it works for me. And I've realized through maturity and groups I'm in that I'm not competing with anybody. Mm-hmm. I'm competing with myself to be the best I could be, to live the life that I want to live. And so I do a lot of different things, in my life. And I think I'm just getting started. I'm 50 and I guess in the past I was on the tail end. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I am just getting started because I'm just starting to have some wisdom and knowledge and salt to now let me live. Like, I wish I knew this stuff. But I tell people, like, God, I wish I felt all this when I was 25 or 30. But the answer is I wasn't ready to. Mm-hmm. I'm ready now. So, but I do have a company that I love and we run on a daily basis with an awesome team of people. Mm-hmm. And get to connect with business owners all over the country.
I love it. Now, one of the things that you mentioned reminded me of myself. I always tell people that the majority of the time, people call me and they go, Sharifa, I don't know what you do, but Paul said, ask Sharifa. And they call and we start this conversation and then they become a client. So sometimes I ask myself, okay, if people don't understand what I do, does that mean my message isn't clear? But it's so difficult to, with everything that I do, put it into just one aspect, one cookie cutter aspect that everyone can understand. Do you understand that, or am I alone on this?
No, I understand what you're saying, but you know what you said is, what cookie cutter? Well, who designed the cookie cutters that they're supposed to be in this shape? I'm this shape, right? I am my shape. And what is, I find why we do what we do as a company is that the digital marketing of the world and all the technology can democratize a lot of things, but it can't, you can't replicate me. I am a unique individual. The planet wouldn't be the same without me. So I don't have to fit into a cookie cutter shape. Like I'm my own little shape and we're all little shapes. So I love, I actually love that I'm, that not everybody can put their finger on exactly what I do and where I make my living in this, because it allows me to have human conversations with people. Because otherwise, if I was a cookie cutter, you don't need me on the show. Go to the bio on the website. Paul does this, what he thinks, this, what he feels. And then what do you need me for? The fact is I'm not, you can't read about me. And I'm also not a static cookie cutter. I change probably by the minute. You know, I could debate Laura on some of the issues that she, the things I don't agree on. And then by the end of the conversation, I'd be like, well, maybe, okay, I kind of never saw it that way. So I don't, you're not a cookie cutter, because a cookie cutter is a fixed shape. I'm like changing every minute and trying to be better and trying to experience. You know, I've learned more on this call, you know, from David. I'm Jewish, not religiously Jewish, culturally, but I went to Hebrew school and was bar mitzvahed. First time I ever heard about a connection between Tara and Torah.
Exactly.
You know, I'm looking at Kathy and we're all shocked that she's a heavy equipment operator. Why? Because we've been taught that, you know, that women that dress a certain way and look a certain shouldn't drive equipment. Why not? Like, you know, so I just live it. I'm trying to live. I got involved in a group about 2.5 years ago. With someone who's now become one of my mentors, but the people in the group are also my mentors, called Build Your Life Resume. And it's really about, forget this paper resume. It means nothing. Like I'm building my life resume of experiences, things I do, people I connect with. And it flipped an entire switch in my head. And I just live differently now. And I wish everybody could feel what I feel and how I live, because it's, you know, I love it.
I can tell you love it just it's by the cool sound of your voice.
People are like, dude, you seem like you're aging backwards. And I'm like, I am, because I flipped a switch in my head about how to live. And I try and share with everybody.
Wonderful. You are interesting. I'm going to come hang out with you. It's probably like, would be like being in the Matrix. Like, we don't anytime. Know where this is going to go, but it'll go somewhere interesting.
You don't know. Anytime. You're welcome anytime. If you can get a camera up here into the brain, probably be a good movie. And I'll argue and debate with you guys, even if I agree with you, because it's more fun.
Yes.
I hate when everybody sits in the middle, and because you get nowhere. I'd rather go to one end of the extreme, because then you really find out what people think. And then I can move back to the middle and kind of find my way. But I like to push buttons a little bit.
Okay. So what we do on the roundtable talk show is we have roundtable discussion, not debate. But with that said, I would love to hear your response to some of the things that Laura had to say.
I'm fascinated by, and again, not educated from a book standpoint, but issues of, you know, redistributing wealth, or why should someone like a Jeff Bezos or anybody else, besides their own personal obligation in their heart, what obligation should they have to give a dollar of theirs to anybody? Now, I personally believe, firmly believe, that we all have an obligation to give back, you know, especially living in this country. You know, this is a right that we get to live in this awesome free land. And some of us get to, sometimes it's luck, sometimes it's really hard work, economically make more. But I don't think it's a government-led initiative that should legislator mandate that someone gives back. I think it's just how we educate people in their lives about why they should give back. But there's no obligation to me from a regulatory standpoint that I should have to give a dollar of what I make to anybody. Now, I want to, I do, I probably give more proportionally than others, but who is to mandate that to me? And I think we're seeing a lot of wealthy people through, I believe it's called the Giving Pledge, where they've agreed to give away their money, but that was a choice. And I don't think anybody has the right to legislate that out, that if you're a billionaire or a trillionaire, that you have to, you're mandated to, that we have to redistribute things. Why? We can, and I believe we should, but you don't have to. You have to in your heart. You have to because it might be the right way to live. But if I've been successful in my company and I make $1 trillion and every day I want to take a $1 million bath and light my money on fire, it's my right. I'll disagree with it, but I don't think the government, I on the other hand, I mean, Laura said something about, well, really good government. I don't know if anybody knows what that means, because I think governments across the world, no matter what side of the aisle you're on, tend to be an S show. I think that because you won maybe a popularity contest in a market for a seat, doesn't make you an expert on business, foreign policy, immigration. It really makes you an expert on very little. But all of a sudden we're supposed to listen to these experts. And if we just take the microcosm of the current pandemic, we have a bunch of people in politics and government and experts that pretty much wake up and guess. They're pretty much the weathermen. Look, it's either going to rain or be sunny today. It'll either be 100 or not. They wake up and go, you know, we might have this disease. It might transmit this way. It doesn't transmit that way. We should do this. Don't do that. Hey, it works there. But these are the people that are supposed to make and tell us what to do with our money and how to run things. So I'd love to see that good government Laura talks about. If we can get there, it would be awesome, because we're supposed to be, but we have elected officials. I am one that firmly believes that every seat in politics should be limited in terms. It's supposed to be government by the people, for the people, not career politicians. So I think everybody should be thrown out after a certain amount of time. So we get new voices. You know, we need to have a heavy equipment operator. We need to have, somebody who studies the Torah. We need to have different people at the top, kind of throwing out new ideas. So I'm fascinated by all, you know, by all this stuff.
Do we need talk show hosts?
Do we need talk shows? Yes, because the right talk show hosts engage conversation. And it's okay to have intelligent debate. And what I find fascinating with my friends is, you know, I'm pro-gun, pro-Second Amendment. My friends who are anti-gun. But if we get off our soapbox and sit and talk, we agree on a lot more than we disagree with. But when you're in social media, you argue the far side, and we're so different. And then we sit down and go, no, I agree with you there. No, I agree with you there. And we disagree on a lot more, but we have to, in public, find the need to win and be right. And so I think that what we're seeing now with, you know, the current protests and the this and that, it seems like we're all so far apart. But individually, if you take any two people, you take one police officer, one protester, one this or one that, and you sit down alone off camera, we tend to agree with a lot more than we disagree with. You know, maybe I'll bring it up in a topic like Doug would understand. Like, I happen to be a Jewish. I'm pro-Israel's right to exist. I think the average, let's say, Palestinian wants to put food on the table, educate his children, and be happy, right? And just live a happy life. But we get on the extremes, and it seems like we're all so different. And I think we are all significantly more similar. We just have to get off the soapbox of trying to win and be right and protect our image, and we'll solve a lot more problems. Firmly believe that, and I practice it every day. And I'm like, wow, I thought we were mortal enemies. You know, my son's roommate and best friend at college is from Russia. Well, I thought we're supposed to have this thing with Russia. They're best friends because they're just kids. They don't let all the other stuff muddle the conversation.
I love it. That's great. I am going to give Laura a chance to respond.
Yeah, and I'd love to hear from Dovid and Kathy too.
Yes, I'm going to get to them.
Yeah.
Would you like Dovid to respond first instead?
Yeah. I'm just intrigued with other viewpoints on
that. I have something to say, actually, that I'd like to say. Yeah.
Absolutely.
No, Dovid.
First of all, I want to say one of the things we really see here is I think the nature of the human being is really to be good and to love. That's really our nature. Greed is natural when we're squeezed. When you're up against the wall, that's when you get greedy. When everything's going good, that's not natural to the human being. And the government, through money manipulation, squeezes us all. And they'll never let that off, because that's the way they can manipulate us. And they put the carrot in front of us. Government can really do it. I must say, I got a good dose of skepticism when it comes to government being in the Navy. And I have a solution, a very practical solution. And I look at the Constitution as a contract between the American people and the government. And it's really like a marriage contract. You know, they know all our secrets. We know some of theirs. And the government is like the man and we're the wife. And the man has become an abusive husband. And it's time to divorce the federal government. What would that mean? Well, they get all the money, they get all the war machine, the whole diplomatic, whatever it is. But what do we get? We get the house and the property. Got to take care of the kids, which means that nobody has to pay rent. This is all family property. And we have lots of places to put everyone with. No one needs to be on the street. We can provide food and shelter for everyone in the country, like a single mother. And that will be our relationship with the federal government. And as long as we have that, they can't squeeze us to force us into work. Like that's what they're trying to do now. They want to take away the $600 of unemployment because they feel it's too much of an incentive not to work. They want to squeeze them, so they got to go back to work because the federal government needs that money. But we're really the ones, we're empowered. If we have a place to stay and we have food, then suddenly power to the people, man. And
so, David, can I jump in there? So that specifically, because I had this talk with someone yesterday, this extra $600, and they're saying, now the company's open, the business is open, and but for maybe, you know, a fear of getting sick and I don't want to go back to work. But let's say that I have an office and I have a private room and I don't have a big staff and I ask employees to come back or a restaurant does.
And just a second. Excuse me, but I mean, I was trying to put forward this idea of divorcing the federal government. They really get, this is a unique idea. So I don't really care about the $600 or this or that. I mean, I care about it, but that's not the point. The point is we need to divorce the federal government. When we still have a relationship with them, just like, a man and woman have a relationship after their divorce. Yeah, we still have a relationship with the federal government, but they no longer can force us, basically to be their whores. That's what we have been.
Very interesting.
They were supposed to love us, they were supposed to care for us, and they didn't. They're an abusive husband, and it's time for a divorce.
Okay, very interesting. But when you say divorce the federal government, literally, what does that mean?
Literally, that they get the power to the money, they get all the money, they get the banks, they get everything. We get the property, we get the houses, because we have to take care of the children. We have to grow the food, take care of the children, and they can go off and do what they want with all the power they've accrued and all the money they've accrued and all the Bezos and all the, they can have it all, man. We need to take care of our family.
So where do they get, you mean they take the current money, but they get no more money?
They can do whatever they want with it. They've been just going, playing roulette with it. They can keep playing roulette with it. What do I care? We don't need money. See, money has been overvalued and this devalues money. All of a sudden, we don't need it so much.
I think very, very interesting. I want to go over to Kathy real quick. Kathy, you've been so patient. You've been sitting there. You've been watching. You've been listening. I just want you to jump in there and give us some of your thoughts this morning.
Well, I sit here absorbing all this information. The one thing that is that we come from such broad backgrounds and different life experiences that I think it brings a lot to the table. Myself personally, I guess my whole life story has been one of such survival and such, you know, so many traumatic events back to back to back to back. Like I should be dead 10 times over, literally. And I'm just kind of starting to get back into, you know, whatever normal is and trying to figure it out. And how do I spend the rest of my life? I mean, I'm 51. And what I realize is that I can take my time and either I choose to give it to politics and to government and, or what am I going to do that's most beneficial? Because if one thing that 13 years of nursing has taught me is that you think you have time, but you don't. So every day, and especially, I mean, I was strangled 3 times to the point of being, to the point of losing my voice and losing consciousness. So, you know, every second that I have to me is very precious. Every breath that I take is precious. And how am I going to spend that time? So what I choose to do with my time instead of committing all my energy on politics and what the government is doing and this and that, I choose to try and uplift every single person that comes my way, because I understand suffering, I understand pain, I understand depression, like I understand all these things. So yes, I have a fantastic job that pays me very well. I have a lot of time off. I mean, like I said, 16 days on, 16 days off. Well, on those 16 days off, I can tell you one thing, that I do not sit on my couch watching useless TV programs. I'm out in the community. I'm doing things. I have collected over 4,000 pairs of work boots at work and distributed them to the poor, to the people that don't have it, the people that are wanting to work but can't afford the boots because they're expensive. So that's what I choose. But as I sit here listening to everyone, I think it's absolutely fascinating at how passionate we each are in our own separate worlds that we live in. And I hope that I'm able to contribute somewhat to, excuse me, to this, but yeah, no, I thank you so much for being part of this. Thank you.
You are so welcome. Thank you for lending your voice there, Kathy. Laura, let's hear from you.
Yeah, it's so interesting, the conversation and these different solutions we all have in mind for these problems we're confronting as a species. I think my viewpoint is that as long as there are income disparities at the level that we see, the system is not working. And relying on individuals to choose is not working. And to have children who are starving, people who cannot get healthcare, and we have been working on these problems for years and relying on, quote, the individual choice, it doesn't work. And it, to me, immoral. So I'm a Zen Buddhist. I was raised, but my stepfather was a Zen priest. And I take that spiritual teaching and commandments, of which there are 108, very seriously. And I think the system's broken. I wish it was what Paul was suggesting, that people should be able to choose and would do it willingly. And we have zero evidence of thousands of years of written history that that is working. In the meantime, we need a system that levels the playing field. Now, should some people be richer than others? Sure, that's going to happen. As rich as they are? No. We need a minimum income. The fact that people are getting paid $600 and they're choosing not to work is not a problem of the individual, it's a problem of the system. That $600 a week is more than most people make at their day job. And those of us sitting around this Zoom talk, appears to me, I don't know your personal financial situation, but we are operating from a place of privilege that we are able to pay our bills with the livings we make. And there are people who go to be wait staff, they work in hospitals, Kathy probably knows people in the lower echelons. They cannot pay their bills. This is not a moral system. And I know I'm taking a very strong stance about this. And I'm not saying that it should be communism. I have lots to say about the original theory of communism, which is misrepresented widely. If you haven't read the original, I encourage you not to comment on communism. It actually infuriates me when people judge communism, because you're judging it by the manifestation of what people have made it, not what Karl Marx and Weber wrote. But Paul, to your point, I take, you know, it's not working. We got kids starving. We got people dying in Africa, drugs that are overpriced. And I would be much more on your side of the let people choose if the system was more, had a more even outcome for people. Just doesn't right now. It's immoral in my view. It's an immoral system. And I use that word intentionally. I don't think you can say you're a practicing Catholic, Christian, Jew, Muslim, Buddhist, and really take it seriously and have somebody like Bezos with that much money and a kid who cannot, who's going to bed hungry every night. There's no call for it. And that they have to rely on Kathy to hand out shoes. She shouldn't have to be handing out shoes to people. They should be able to afford them. People shouldn't have to go to a food pantry. They should have a living wage that puts food on their tables without having to go with hat in hand to anybody. It's demeaning. And there's enough money for all of us, damn it. We don't even need to create any more wealth. There's so much wealth in this world. All you have to do is redistribute it. And it doesn't have to be even Steven. Just bring the top down and bring the bottom up. Narrow the bandwidth. That's it. It's not rocket science.
Excuse me, I would appreciate if you would respond to my idea.
I have some thoughts. Yeah, I do have some thoughts on yours. I had a question for you. I'm really intrigued with your idea. My question is to you. So the people divorce, as you said, federal government, people get the houses. The thing that popped in my head is what happens for people first? How is decision-making carried out by the wife part of this equation? And number two, what happens to the people who don't own any property?
Yes. Well, as soon as we don't have to pay any rent, people don't have to pay any mortgage. And it seems to me that all the houses would be under the control of the city, and the city would be under control of the state. And we see that on a state level, it seems to work pretty well, right? As soon as the federal government gets involved, you know, we see it through the epidemic that's going on now. So, you know, you could have, there's so many systems. You could have a lottery. The main thing is first, everyone has to be somewhere. You can't have people on the street. Since I was a child, this is absurd. It's just absurd. And so we know we have lots of property. We'd be free to have like block, just know everyone on your block and get together. And, you know, we're missing out on life because they're making us just work. And we find a thing we love and we do, and we think we're part of some process, and we see the process sucks. Who wants to be part of that? So this gives us a way to really live more with the things that are real in life. Like just like Kathy, she does her work and then she wants to go out and be part of life. We all want to do this. We all want to love. That's the true nature of the human being, is to love.
Yeah, I think so too. I loved your point about it's fear and scarcity that drives greed.
And that's what the government does. They're constantly, turning the screw. No matter how much money we get, we see the greatest economy everywhere, and the people are in the worst situation. So who needs rich people? What do? They go up into outer space. Who needs this?
I'm having trouble with the last statement because my son is an astrophysicist and he's working on a rocket building.
They say between the moon and the earth is where it starts spirituality.
Interesting.
We have that whole area to do stuff with, but the rest of us, we should really leave alone. It's just, we need to focus on the earth because this is where everything is. All the people are beautiful. Every human being is such a miracle to be able to do what we do, just to be able to speak, to articulate thoughts. And we're not appreciating what we have. And let me just add, there's so much I'd like to say, but I don't want to take everyone's time. But a few things, we should know that, in the Tree of Life, there's also a calendar. And the first 6,000 years are the male part of the calendar. And we're 220 years from the end of that calendar to where we enter into 1,000 years of woman and 1,000 years of peace. And unfortunately, nobody talks about this. And it's very important to understand we're at that place. And men, this is where we show who we are as men after 6,000 years. And our job has to be to hold our women above ourselves and to take care of the women and children in our country. That's what men should be doing, because the truth is, if a man makes a woman happy, that's the greatest pleasure he has.
Your lips to God's ears, Dovin.
I'm like, I think that is wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. I personally would love to hear more, Dovin, about your idea, because for me, in my mind, it's still not clear. There's a missing point, a missing part, but we are running out of time. And what I love to do at the end of every show is just allow my guests the opportunity to speak directly to the audience, to everyone who's watching live, as well as everyone who's watching this show in the archives, and really let them know what you would like for them to take away from your appearance. And we're going to start with you, Kathy.
You know, the one thing that is that for people and figure out who they are and what they want to give back and not get trapped in the illusions of the world that the world throws out left, right, and center. Time is short. You think you have time, like I said earlier, you really don't. So you use that time wisely, but ultimately discover who you truly are and what you want to achieve, not what society expects of you.
Well said.
I definitely agree. David, we're going to go over to you.
All right. I'd like everyone to know that when the eclipse passed over America, the year was 5777. And when Donald Trump was inaugurated, he was 70 years, 7 months, and 7 days. And on March 11th, when the World Health Organization proclaimed the pandemic to be a worldwide epidemic, that there was 7,770,000,000 people in the world, and the 777 has to do with ending. Actually, the angel of death is noted by the number 777. And we should know that this is the end of this male energy, and this is the time for the paradigm shift.
Okay, so explain to me, David, because again, I'm a talk show host. I have to agree with Paul. Like, I don't have a degree. I just learn. I talk to a lot of people. I expand. So what is the connection between the 777 and Donald Trump in your opinion? Like, what are you saying?
Well, he is the guy it's all going to end with. He is the end. He is the end of the process. See, what God wants in creation, God wants to be known in low. And we are the lowest of all the generations. And he is the lowest person in this generation because he has no compassion. And, he only thinks about himself and thinks about money. This is the lowest there is. So God put him in this high place. So God is being known to this man and before the eyes of the world. And now we can go on and go into the 1,000 years of woman. So that's why he was that age at the time of the inauguration. These are signs that this is the end, and we should be strengthened by that. And to know that it's not futile to go out into the street and to protest like it has been so many other times. Now things can really change, and we need to all, I think everyone step forward and be part of that change.
I just want to make sure I'm clear though, because this is the end, and I wanted you to have your final words, but I like clarity. That's like one of my favorite words. Sure, I'm big on verbiage, semantics, terminology. When you say Donald Trump is the end, you mean the end of the world, the end of,
Well, these are the end of days because it's the end of the calendar. He's the end of this process of 6,000 years. The six has to do with male energy. You know, the number six in Hebrew, they're all letters, is just a vertical line. This is male, see? And it ends with the seven, which is woman. So we see this is the end of the male energy. And now we start going into the female, into the woman.
So the next president is going to be a woman, is what you're saying?
No, it's not so clear like that, but we see that they're taking control more and more, and men are ceding power to them because women do many things better than men. particularly when it comes to multitasking, and women get along well in Congress. And just in a very natural way, women are being elevated above men. And instead, some men will want to pull them down, but the most men will want to lift them up. We want to lift our women up. Our women are beautiful.
David, you are interesting. I'll tell you that right now. I wish I had more time. I wish I could sit here and pick your brain and ask you a million questions.
I have a lot to say.
I can tell. Come back. Feel free to return. Go to AskSharifa.com and grab a seat. But I will have to move on to Laura.
Sure.
I want to second a lot of what these closing comments are. I guess from where the space that I'm working in, I would say use your power to change the system. Don't focus on what an individual does or didn't do, but we've really got to get systems at work on all levels. And so in any moment where you are an influencer or a decider or in a power position, change the rules, change the system, make it better.
Love that. I'm kind of scared right now.
I got scared too from Dovid's thing. Yeah, I got to know more about what's ending and what's starting. I love the idea of the anima energy, the female energy, anima energy having more dominance. I couldn't agree more. Animus energy, whether it's embodied in men or women, when it's unbridled, is dangerous. So is too much anima energy. But having a little more anima running the world is probably would be a nice thing for a while. And anima can be in men and women. It's not a body gender energy. Mm-hmm. It's a frame of reference to how you manifest what you want to have happen in the world, what you consider important.
I definitely agree.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking when you ask a nonconformist a question that you don't always get a safe answer. So Paul, tell us what you have to say.
No. Well, there's a lot I can say. I would love to debate this all day because I think, I mean, look, I'm going to be honest. Some of it opens my mind and some of it I go, what? Like, sounds good on paper. Like, I don't know what I can go that way. But as I started the conversation with, I'm going to go with, we're all very different. We all disagree on lots of things. We all have our own beliefs, but I'm going to go where I agree with everybody. Kathy, I agree with you. People have to live their own life. They have to find their happiness. They have to get up and go do things and live the way they want to live and be happy. So we agree on that. David, we need a lot more time together, but you keep talking about-
I want to be there though. I want to be there when you guys have this time together.
Oh, because we'll go at it and then we'll hug and love each other. But David kept talking about numbers. 7, 6, is this? Well, at ringboost.com, we happen to all be about numbers. So we agree there. Numbers are important. For me, it's about how to connect with consumers and make them easy to reach you, you know, by having a great number. David studies those numbers and what they mean. I would love to spend an 8-hour episode really digging into this and saying, God, this sounds good on paper, but now let's see it work in the real world. But I want to find where we have commonality. And I love the thought. I love the belief. But most importantly, I love the fact that he talks about numbers because at ringboost.com, that's all we're about is numbers. And from Laura, what I want to talk about, you said use your powers to change the system. It's one of the areas where I don't want to say I disagree. Where I disagree but really agree is I use your power to change one person. Use your power to change. I don't really believe that I can change the system. Whether I protest, whether I run for office, I don't believe that I can change this system as an entity. I can change one person. I could change two people. I could change five people. And if I change those 2, 3, 4, 5 and empower them to go change the next 4 or 5, we will change the system. We will change the system. I can't, you can't, Dove can't, Kathy can't, Sharifa can't. We can by changing ourselves a little and changing one or two other people. And if we find the commonality, because our voice matters. And that's really at Ringo's what we're all about. Your voice matters, who you are matters, you know? And I think that's how we change the system to a better one for all of us. You know, where the wealth distribution or who's in charge, but we can change the system by we. That's what I agree with that with everybody. And I find the commonality. I love the fact that when I saw this morning, I'm like, what am I doing? I have a tarot reader and a this. I love it. I love it versus being on a call with four entrepreneurs or, you know, for this or for, you know, 50-year-old white men, my age, where we could all talk. I love the fact that we have five people here that you would think couldn't be more different, but can have an intelligent conversation and disagree as humans and still respect each other and be kind to one another and be open to learn from one another. I love this format. I love what you did here. I looked at the guests. I'm like, what? This is awesome. Now, if you want to have a show where we just debate and fight, I could do that too, because I love this. This is great too.
No debating, no fighting.
I love it though.
It starts with, I can tell you've probably been doing that all your life. You was arguing it too.
I argue because I want to come together and I want to understand what you believe so you could teach me, and I could still disagree with you, but I could disagree with and respect you. I could disagree and not think I'm right. I come to this game with the shoes I'm wearing, these eyes, this brain, this set of life experiences. Doesn't mean it's right. It just means it's what I come with. So I have to be open to, you know, I think when we all stop trying to be right and stop trying to win, we can actually move a little bit more together, you know, and move a little bit more, move a little bit more. So I love this format. I think it's fascinating. I think that I've learned not to always have to win and be right, that I want to say, okay, maybe there's something there. Let me dig a little deeper. I still might never agree with you.
That is wonderful.
But I can respect you and honor you and love you, and we're all in this together.
Absolutely. We are all in this together. And I love hearing different viewpoints and love bringing people together to discuss current events and what's going on in the world. And that's really what it's about. If we get the viewpoints of each person, then we'll be able to change the world, make the world a better place. And that is my goal and why I created the Roundtable Talk Show and why I created my $50,000 production fundraiser on Facebook to be able to raise more money, to be able to take care of more advertising, hire more people, and get the Roundtable Talk Show in front of more people so they can learn about all of you. So I want to thank all of you for being a guest on today's episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. I also want to thank everyone who tuned in to watch the show live, as well as everyone who's watching it in the archives. I definitely appreciate your support. But again, I want to ask for even more of your support. Please go ahead and share this show with your friends. Send it over to them. Email it to them. Let your friends know that we are having positive, life-changing, world-changing conversations here at the Roundtable Talk Show. And if you are interested in being a guest, please visit the website at asksharifa.com. Until tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, everyone have a safe and a blessed day. Bye now.
Yes.